Well, this is the Real BS Show, coming at you from, I don't know where.
Downtown Union City.
Who cares? Yeah, don't tell anybody.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, Seth, I wanted to ask you something this week. Did you ever think about prepping?
Oh, yeah.
Or grid down, you know,
oh, sure.
Like if electricity just all of a sudden turns off and...
Oh, yeah.
For a week, or for a month, or if there's actually a world war,
right?
Or you know, there's a couple of things you got to do.
You have to be prepared.
Well, you got to feed yourself.
Definitely.
And what else you got to do?
Well, you got to make sure you have water. You got to make sure you have health supplies. You know, like anything like med supplies to make sure. I'm not talking like medicine or anything like that, but you also have to have like first aid kits and, you know, preserved food. You know, you don't have to have canned food or canning yourself, making sure you're canning food yourself.
Yeah, so you have some food stocked up. Well, yeah. Toilet stuff and medicine, you said.
Yeah.
Maybe batteries or something,
right.
You know, something, some lighting, I mean, at nighttime.
Right.
You need something to, candles or whatever, you know?
There's a lot of different aspects you have to have.
And then how do you stay warm?
Well, that's another problem,
At the wrong time of year, you got to stay warm.
I think there's a lot of different things that we can make a list of, and some have to have more priority than others. Some people put all their focus on, let's say, there's some people out there that I've met that would put focus on buying multiple different weapons, like guns and rifles and handguns and
self-defense.
And there's nothing wrong with guns. I'm a gun person myself. I'm a big Second Amendment advocate. But maybe, you know, buy less guns and more bullets, or maybe buy more medical stuff, or buy more, because, you know, if you get hurt, you could easily hurt yourself somewhere. You know, do you have enough socks? Do you have enough, you know, boots? Do you have enough underwear? This is no joke. You might need more underwear than you need bullets. You know,
well, it depends what you eat, I guess.
Sure. You know, and I think this is where, you know, what your priorities are important. You know, having food, having a garden, being able to know how to grow food.
Knowledge is a biggie,
But, you know, there's different events. You have to prepare for different types of events. There's, you know, a societal collapse, which can happen. It's happened in other countries. Look at Venezuela. They are in complete turmoil from their currency becoming extremely inflated and their government being extremely corrupt, and that people are barely surviving.
I think that's where we're headed.
Well,
we're headed the same way Venezuela.
There's truth to that, and there's the other side of it. There could be some major world event where, like a Carrington event happens, that wipes out the electrical grid from the sun, from solar flares, like a geothermal storm hitting the earth, which happened in 1859. And we can talk about that as well. But there's a lot of different things that people definitely need to be prepared on. And you could share what you do. And
well, I've been doing it for 10, 12 years.
Right.
I mean, I just figured the only thing I thought about is, what happens if the electricity goes off?
Right.
I always think of that. And I'm thinking, so, you know, for the last 6-7 years now, I don't care if the electric goes off.
Right.
Because I don't use the electric.
I
make my own.
Right.
And I get my own water from the woods, you know. I mean, there's a spring there that never stops, so, and I use that water.
One thing I would say is, you know, that some people don't account for is, if all the food was to stop being delivered, imagine how in the past we basically almost came to that point during COVID, when it was at its peak. People couldn't get toilet paper and couldn't get, you know, basic supplies. Formula was short on the shelves. How are you going to prepare for that? Well, you're going to have to basically say, can I survive for 2 weeks or more?
Yeah, if Walmart closes their doors for a month, what are you going to do?
Right. That's a problem.
Yeah.
And it's almost like a zombie acropolis. You know, how can you handle something like that, you know? And that's where I think we basically need to, like, decipher which one are you going to handle, which one's more likely, what's the probability of it. And I don't know. You know, let's say we aim for the electrical grid gets a geometric storm and it hits the earth. That's something is the worst case scenario, in my opinion, because everything gets shut down. Deliveries to grocery stores.
Airplanes falling out of the sky. Yeah. I mean, just what a mess.
We would be...
All our cars and everything would stop.
You wouldn't be able to use your debit card, credit card, nothing. You couldn't be able to use anything like that. Cash would probably be king. We would basically have to...
Gold and silver would be back in business.
Yeah.
That'd be the only money,
and
which it really is anyway. So
I wouldn't want to be in a city during that time for sure. You know,
you don't want to be too close to too many crazies.
And I think that some people will really think I'm a nutcase for saying that. But if you think about it, if a complete, distribution of all the goods that get traversed this country, if that was the stop, the cities would be crawling with people panicking. And that's something, that's a worst-case scenario. Again, we're talking about the worst-case scenario. The whole world collapses, or a good part of the world collapses from – because everything's electrical. Everything's electrified, and without that electricity, we live in a bubble. We live in a bubble with that electricity. Without it, we're basically back to the Stone Age,
That would kill a lot of people.
I hate to say the Stone Age, but the Iron Age, we'd be back to Iron Age technology. And that's a tough world. We take that for granted.
We've had it soft for so long that at least in the United States.
Oh yeah, at least for 200 years.
Pretty much, yeah.
200 years.
Other countries not so much, but
right.
We've really got it easy compared to other places.
I would say that the last 200 years have been a progression that made basically a bubble for everyone to live, and a soft cushion bubble that we take for granted, and people complain all the time and don't realize how nice we have it compared to our ancestors. Yes, there's problems that are happening. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to diminish those. But we have to look in the bigger picture and look back through history and how great we have it and how easily and fragile that is. And some of the things we got from different videos from different people that we basically cut up and put in the show.
It was kind of interesting to hear them talk.
Right. And they kind of go into...
It brought back a lot of memories, because when growing up, we were poor, very poor.
Right.
So us kids did all the gardening. I mean, that was awful. And then they canned everything.
Right.
I mean, canning and canning and canning. Holy cow.
That's what my parents did. They both had canning.
Yeah, that was...
You had to.
From the garden.
You had to. In some ways, think about it, though. You ate more fresh food than you would get in a store nowadays,
Yeah, well, we grew it. And it wasn't full of a lot of pesticides and chemicals and whatnot, which things are nowadays, and we don't even know.
But, don't you think in a lot of ways that was a better childhood than some what people are facing today, these kids.
Well, I think so, because when I look back at it,
most people aren't going outside anymore.
We were outside all the time. Constantly. It never stopped.
That was your babysitter in a way.
Yeah. When the streetlights come on, you get home, that was it. Boom.
But that's what I'm kind of getting at. A point is the kids these days have less knowledge about how to operate.
They know how to operate a video games.
But do they know how to garden? Do they know how to plant? No. These are things that need to be taught in the future in some ways. I think knowing that, how to do that, is more educational than anything else. And, knowing how to plant food, your own food, and grow your own food. And there's truth to it. That, to feed a family, you might need 3 acres for a whole year. And then what if your crops fail? That's the problem. If you go back 200, 300 years ago, that's how most people lived. 90% of the American population back then were farmers.
I've been for the last 10 years stocking up on Mountain House, Augustine Farms, a couple other Wise, I think was another brand name.
Right.
Stuff that's supposed to last 30 years,
Right.
But I just stock it up. I don't, every now and then I'll break out a bag of biscuits, or something.
Right. Like a can of soup or whatever they call it, the one big bucket that has like a beast.
And I got a lot of that too. I got canned this and canned that. But it's got, a date on it for 3 years. And then even then it's probably good for another year or two after that. So I got a lot of those and I kind of rotate that. I break in, but then I replace it. But I do have that, like the Mountain House is the best that I've ever tried, and it's it's probably got another 20 years left on their expiration date. But they got a lot of variety of stuff,
right,
you know.
Right.
So I wouldn't be hurting, you know. I got that stocked up, you know. It's
right.
On shelves. It's in.
And it's secured from any rodents or anything like that.
Yeah,
you know,
right. It definitely. And as far as toilet paper, I think I got enough toilet paper to last the rest of my life.
Right.
One
of the investments I did, and I'll admit this is before COVID even hit, I got a bidet. And that sounds like, you know, I'm trying to be fancy or anything. No, I don't have to be worried about if the toilet paper ran out, because you factor in, let's say in a worst case scenario, you're not going to be able to get toilet paper. That's the first thing, you know, we saw that during COVID. People panic bought toilet paper, and the shelves were just emptied. I'd walk by.
I remember seeing the shelves empty. Remember that.
Yeah. I'd walk by those. And I'm like, I don't have to worry about that. I have a bidet. You know, I don't have to worry about, you know.
I'm kind of foreign to the bidet thing. Is that like a steam cleaner?
No, it sends water up and just cleans things, you know. It's just like kind of like, imagine if you had a shower. This is just a picture I'll paint.
You have to use a toothbrush or something?
No.
No?
It just water cleans. But imagine this. You have a shower with a...
So like a jet spray.
Well, yeah. Imagine if you have a detachable shower head. You can take off the shower head and clean your whole body all over without having to, you know, mess around with it so much. That's a bidet, kind of does that. Just gets down in there and just cleans everything up.
Huh.
But that stays on. I have to worry about toilet paper. I don't have to worry about it. I still buy toilet paper because just, you know, not everybody's going to want to use that. They're going to come over.
You want to look normal like the neighbors.
Huh? Yeah, sure. But
just stockpile it up. And then when it happens, what do you call it?
Escalates.
Yeah. STHF or something.
STF. Oh, yeah.
Something hits the fan. You can go out and sell it.
Yeah, yeah.
Open up a toilet paper shop.
But even in the situation, the worst case scenario we talked about in the beginning is if a solar storm hits, we're both screwed because we both have solar panels. We both, we have electricity.
All my electronics would be toasted.
We don't have it shielded, you know.
Right.
So we're both in that situation. We're screwed, no electricity. And in that situation, it's very difficult because you can't shield solar panels.
Well,
you can't shield a windmill.
Solar flare, but you also got to think about China or Russia,
right.
EMP, which is the same thing.
Right.
You know, 200,000 volts just toasting everything.
And the key thing with the EMPs right now, with the current technology I have heard about and read about, is that's, and this is stuff that's like not everybody reads, it's very localized. So they would be hitting like New York City with that, not like our area, you know.
They could, if they shot one off in, 90,000 feet up over St. Louis, they'd get most of the country.
I've heard about that, but I doubt that those are that powerful.
From what I've seen, yeah.
And it's just, the thing is we have to be prepared for that.
Hook it to a weather balloon and float it over
there,
our country.
Yeah, right, right.
Boom.
You know, the signal stuff, the signal intelligence stuff that's been going on in both countries, you know, we both recognize that, the U.S. and China, Russia, Japan, India, even, they're all participating in signal intelligence with these different balloon devices, drones. Drones are becoming very popular. You can do a lot of damage more than people realize. But,
well, the balloon thing, they've been doing that for years.
Yeah, exactly.
Just now, all of a sudden, they've shot down four or five.
Right.
Unidentified. Oh,
the thing is they've done this before and just never publicized that they shot them down. You know, that's the key thing here.
They're trying to take our attention away from something else.
Probably.
I don't know what it is. But
there's
economic collapse that's about to come.
That, and you know, there's a lot of concern about also food supply situations. You know, we have to recognize that with the growing food. Struggles. The distribution is becoming a growing problem more than people realize. You know, during COVID, remember we did one of the podcasts where we talked about buy wheat because we'll need it. And I've been telling that people we should have farmers growing wheat in this country because we're going to need it. And it's sad to say that that's not happened. You don't see farmers planting wheat because guess what? They're told not to by the government. And how's that going to affect things? Well, each region, if you think about it, in this region, who's growing wheat? Nobody. So if we were having like a solar storm, because that's like the worst case scenario, as the sun basically silences all the electrification that's in this country. Who has wheat that you know? No one. And that's just one example. You wouldn't be able to get bread or anything that's a product of that, that's wheat. And here we are. We're back to square one again. No one has wheat. They have soybeans. You can't. You can make bread out of that, I'm sure. But really, is that going to be good bread? You know?
Well, you got to adjust your taste buds. So
I just, you know, these are an example here. Where
no, it evolves everything. I mean, if the power goes off, there's no refrigeration. There's
right.
no, I mean, it's just.
It's a chain reaction. Yeah.
Unbelievably. Yeah.
And it goes back to.
And then people will be robbing and stealing and killing each other. Yeah. For the very basics, you know,
your neighbors no longer become your friends; they become your enemies real quick. And I think that's again, it goes back to what the basic supplies that you need.
Well, I know some neighborhoods that are like they have groups where everybody's pitching in, and
right. kind
of almost communist, like where they're just preparing everything, and it involves a group of people. That live in a certain area.
Right.
And so they're all watching out for each other.
But even in that group, you still have somebody that will be panicky, I'll call it, and be willing to take more than they should. And this is going to be a growing problem. The people that you have a real hard time trusting people in these situations because everyone starts thinking instantly for themselves. And that's a survival instinct. You start thinking for your family only. And I think that's... You know, we have to look at basic human psychology in that situation.
Well, when it comes to prepping, I live off the grid already, so
right.
I've been doing it for years. So I, you know, unless there's an EMP or a coronal mass ejection or whatever,
right.
and it toasts all my controls, well then I'm in trouble. But if it's just the electric goes off, I don't know.
Would you want to talk? Have a thing about the Carrington event? We can go into that and maybe kind of set the basis of what could happen and what happened then. What all got damaged?
Well, and the Carrington event happened so long ago that about the only thing was going was the telegraph system.
Yeah, and they had some early they had some a little bit of electrification, but not much.
Oh, yeah,
but
they had transformers to be able to pump the signal across across the country,
really, and it killed people
on wires. Though.
Yeah. Yeah, it killed people. And
nowadays, if that happened, holy
it would be
catfish.
Much more massive. Yeah, much.
What a mess it would be.
Anything digitalized would be gone. Hard drives would be wiped.
Well, even your houses, the wiring
your houses, would be burning.
It's covered with plastic. I mean, it would melt the plastic off and burn down your house.
Yeah, yeah.
And without a problem.
Right.
I mean, and it just wouldn't stop. I mean,
and it would take every wire, too, with it, you know.
What a mess that would be.
It'd be like one massive resistor in the house that'd fry.
No more cars, no more airplanes, no more refrigeration, no
right,
more.
Right, right.
How would you heat, you know,
right.
unless you got a wood stove or, you know, you got some wood.
But think about this. You wouldn't be able to use chainsaws to cut wood. You would have to use axes. And then if you had to make a new axe, you'd have to hand make the handles for the axes. I mean, you're going back to everything being handmade right then and there. And no medical, all, like doctors and everything.
Unless you want to raid a hardware store.
Yeah,
or something.
Yeah.
Go down to Home Depot. In open season.
Right.
Oh, geez, what a mess that would be.
But how would you get to Home Depot then? You're going how are you to cart everything back? You know,
that's why they build them outside of towns. You know.
There's a chain reaction to this. Everything.
Can't take the bus; it'd be shut down.
You can't take you. How many people have horses? You know, I mean, that's another problem. You know, like, you know, how many people have a horse and buggy? You know,
you have to talk to your Amish friends
and
see if they can help you out. Yeah, they'd be the modern ones then.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Well, the Carrington thing. Yeah, you can start off with that. But the prepping thing, like I say, I got a lot of food. I think I got enough food to eat for a year, or more. I got a lifetime worth of toilet paper. I don't know how I did that. I dehydrated vegetables. I'd get the organically grown, like the frozen stuff.
Right.
And I would stick it in the dehydrator and, you know, 5-6 hours later, vacuum seal, put it in a mason jar and vacuum seal the jar.
Right.
And I got, you know, bunches of those and all kinds of things, bananas, strawberries, you know, you name it. I mushroom, I really like the mushrooms, boy. If you put, you reconstitute mushrooms and man, do they taste good.
Right.
Ooh, Unbelievable.
Taking all the moisture out of them.
Well, yeah, but when you put the moisture back, man, do they taste good. You don't even have to put the moisture back. Just throw them in your mouth, you know, just mushroom chips or whatever you want to call it. And your mouth will do the work. And, man, are they good. Really tasty. Yeah, I've got even some meat. I did some meat. I tried that. And I can't think of what else. I got a lot of stuff. I mean, a lot of different things, a lot of vegetables and herbs. Vegetables and fruits too. I did fruits, but when you dehydrate, you take all the moisture out, and it just shrivels up and
limits the bacteria growth. Yeah.
And then you put them in a mason jar and vacuum seal it. Take the oxygen out and seal it up, and boom, you're good to go.
Right.
How long? I don't know.
Right. You have to test it to make sure, because there's some historical.
I'll tell you, the test is your nose.
Right.
If it doesn't look right and it doesn't smell right, then it's not right.
Yeah, it's right. Well, there's historical...
kind of built in.
...groups that back in the day, they used to do this... I'm drawing a blank on the name of it, but basically they took beef or bison and they were able to keep it so it wouldn't spoil for a year.
Yeah, like with salt.
Yeah, no, there was no salt. They basically dried it and basically, you know, they smoked it and dried it and then...
They
basically crumbled it into a powder almost, and then you could make that into anything. And they added like buffalo fat and if you added berries to it, like there's certain berries that they would add to it that would spoil it faster because it'd ferment. But basically, it lasted a long time. And when we come back from the Carrington thing, I'll try to remember the name of it because
there's one other thing you got to think about, and that's money.
Yeah.
You know, credit cards aren't going to work.
No,
your debit card's not going to work.
Right.
If all your money's in the bank,
you're screwed.
The bank has your money.
Right.
Once you deposit in the bank, it's theirs.
Right.
So if all of a sudden they decide they want a bank run or whatever you want to call it, all of a sudden they shut down, guess what, folks? You're out. You don't have any money.
Right.
So I have a little bit of, I've hidden some money, well, more than a little, but it's just in case, because cash or silver or gold or whatever, about the only things you're going to be able to use,
because
all that plastic ain't going to work.
That's true.
So, yeah, if you don't have it in your hand, you don't have anything, because the bank's got it.
Right.
So, the Carrington thing, because I haven't heard that either, so I don't know too much about it.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite parts of history, because it could be effect today, you know?
Oh, sure. The sun blows its cork, you know, we're in trouble.
Right. And this has happened before throughout history. This is not the first time, but it happened in previous histories too. People reported on it, you know. So, yeah. We'll roll with that and then we'll come back with it.
Okay.
On the night of the 28th of August, 1859, skies around the world lit up with spectacular displays of light. In some places, the heavens glowed red, as though reflecting a massive wildfire. Elsewhere, broad bands of white light were seen dancing across the night sky. For almost a week, skies around the world glowed so brightly that it was possible to read a newspaper at midnight. Everywhere, people gathered and gazed upwards, terrified and awestruck in equal measure. The vast majority had no idea what they were witnessing, and could only assume that it was a portent of the end of the world. Reports exist from many different countries of the strange phenomena that could be seen during the week which followed the 28th of August, 1859. In Boston, the sky glowed red to such a degree that many who witnessed it believed that there was a fire burning over the horizon, at least until the red transmuted to a vivid green. Elsewhere, witnesses reported seeing columns of light moving across the sky, and spoke of multicolored rays and arches forming, coalescing, and disintegrating. One account in the San Francisco Herald ran as follows. The whole sky appeared to undulate, something like a field of grain in a high wind. The waters of the bay reflected the brilliant hues of the aurora. Nothing could exceed the grandeur and beauty of the sight. The effect was almost bewildering, and was witnessed with mingled feelings of awe and delight by thousands. Such was the brightness of these lights that many people rose from their beds, thinking that dawn had arrived. A group of masons in South Carolina got up and started work on a job site before realizing that it was still the middle of the night and going back home. In Virginia, a railroad conductor, angered by the sound of larks singing as though it was morning, when in fact it was only just 1 a.m., got out his pistol and shot three birds dead so that he could get back to sleep. At the same time, in Ohio, the sight of the night sky illuminated like a Christmas tree proved too much for one 16-year-old girl. Over the course of the week-long event, she became increasingly agitated, believing that the strange lights heralded the end of the world. She was ultimately committed to an insane asylum. At the same time as the heavenly light show was sending the general population into a frenzy of fear and wonder, telegraph operators around the world were also experiencing bizarre and unexpected difficulties. Something was wrong with their equipment. In some places, telegraph operators received electric shocks and burns when they touched their telegraph keys, or witnessed sparks and arcing from telegraph wires. Elsewhere, operators discovered, much to their surprise, that they could unhook their batteries and still continue to transmit messages. Operators on the American telegraph line between Boston and Portland, after briefly marveling that they could work without batteries, went about their business sending the messages of the day as normal, batteries disconnected. Newspapers during the week of the event were dominated by accounts of the lights in the sky and the disruption of the telegraph system. In some cases, this was all that could be printed, since interruption of telegraph services meant that no news dispatches from the wider world had come in. All in all, these events defied explanation, leaving many to speculate that they were signs of the coming apocalypse. The actual explanation was rather less catastrophic, and would be uncovered by the report of a British amateur astronomer, Richard Carrington. On the 1st of September, 1859, he was in his private observatory on his estate just outside London, busily monitoring sunspots. Sunspots are dark patches often seen on the surface of the sun, and Carrington had devoted a great deal of time to tracking their movements, as he believed that their importance was only just beginning to be understood. While he was busy with his work, Carrington witnessed something unusual. Two patches of intense white light appeared on the surface of the sun, flared briefly, and then disappeared. Intrigued, Carrington made a drawing to capture his observations, something he would later send to the Royal Astronomical Society as part of a complete report. Although he didn't know it at the time, Carrington had just witnessed two in a series of solar flares. Solar flares are violent events on the surface of the sun, which are almost always accompanied by the ejection of a huge quantity of energetic particles. Of course, the sun constantly emits a solar wind of such particles. Usually, we are completely protected from these by the Earth's own magnetic field. This field stops radiation from the solar wind from harming us, and prevents it from degrading the atmosphere. Only a tiny amount of the material delivered by solar winds can penetrate our atmosphere. Because of the orientation of the Earth's magnetic field, this is most likely to happen at the North and South Poles, something which results in the phenomenon we know as Aurora Borealis, or the Northern Lights. During solar flares, the sun releases much more material than usual, a huge belch of magnetized plasma. When this is directed towards the Earth, Aurora Borealis becomes visible far beyond the poles. The solar flares witnessed by Carrington had just sent another massive dose of magnetized plasma on its way towards Earth. That evening, the terrifying and awe-inspiring lights in the sky would be seen again around the world. It would be some time, of course, before Carrington's report allowed the flares and the bizarre activity in the skies to be linked. When they finally were, it was decided that the event should be named in his honour, the Carrington Event. Carrington would have every reason to be pleased to be remembered in such a way. After all, the Carrington Event made headlines around the world, and while it caused some disruption, it was far from deadly. At the time, it must have seemed a bizarre but momentous scientific discovery, not something that would pose any real danger to the world at large. The significance of the Carrington Event, however, should not be missed. In 1859, electrical technology was relatively basic, with the telegraph system the only piece of technology in widespread use that was reliant on electrical power. Since then, much, much more of the world's infrastructure has come to be dependent on electricity. Which begs the question, what would happen should a Carrington-level event occur today? Unlike in 1859, it's fairly likely that we'd have some warning when a geomagnetic storm might affect the Earth. Systems currently in place should allow us at least one full day to prepare. And the long-term effects of the event would be very much dependent on that preparation. A quick and coordinated response would involve taking any systems that might be damaged by the event offline for its duration. In this best-case scenario, then, a Carrington-level event would mean a week of severe disruption the world over. But only a week. On the other hand, there is the worst-case scenario, wherein we fail to prepare, or where we don't have sufficient warning of an incoming Carrington-level event. This would result in some of the most extensive blackouts ever seen, a simultaneous loss of power, loss of communications, and the failure of most modern technology. Planes would be grounded, hospitals left in the dark, traffic control in cities absent. Card-based transactions would be impossible. Refrigeration would fail. Banking services would be offline. Supply chains would crumble. The world at large could be thrown back hundreds of years in terms of technology. And this wouldn't necessarily be just for the duration of the event. If power grids were not taken offline to protect them before the event, permanent damage could be caused. Given the scale of some power grids, experts estimate that it could take as long as 10 years to completely recover from a worst-case scenario Carrington-level event. Finally, it should also be stressed that it really isn't a question of if, but when. Estimates vary, but it is thought by many that a Carrington-level event might strike the Earth, on average, once every 150 years. At the time of recording, it has been more than 160 years since the Carrington event. We are, by some measures, overdue.
This is the real BS show trying to prepare you for, well,
prep.
You know, the people used to tell me, say, what are you, crazy? You know, you're storing all this stuff up and it's going to be good for the next 30 years and that and that. Well, so what?
Right.
You know, I can eat it anytime I want.
Right, right. So it's still good.
And if I don't need, if I don't need this stuff, what's the harm, you know?
Right, right.
I mean,
I think having, you know, there's different levels of being prepped. There's some people that are super prepped with, you know.
Well, they got bunkers buried underneath the ground.
Yeah.
I mean, they spent, you know.
Thousands of dollars.
Hundreds of thousands of dollars.
There's, again, going back to what I said earlier, there's a few people I've known that spent more money on certain things that they shouldn't have probably focused on. And there's other simple, basic necessities that they're forgetting. And sometimes people get hyper-focused on certain things they need to get, and they forget other things. So food is a good one to keep in mind and have a good supply of. But there's some people that focus on, you know, buying more weapons than they have bullets. And that's an example there. You need less weapons, only a few weapons, because you don't have that many, need that many weapons to be prepared. You need to have more ammo. That's another thing. You need to have medical supplies. You need to have food. You need to have a way of filtering water. That's going to be a major thing.
That's a biggie.
Yeah, I mean, people don't even realize that. They got to think, you know, you have a spring, but I'm sure you still filter that water, don't you?
Well, if for soups and hot chocolate and stuff like that, yeah, I have a Berkey filter.
Right, you know? Right.
And but just for taking a shower or dishes or whatever,
filtered, yeah.
You don't need to filter it. I mean, it's really nice water already.
Right.
And but I do use a Berkey filter for drinking. You
right.
Know, for
and those Berkey filters work stuff. Great. You know, they're great filters. They I don't think the one I have, I haven't had to replace the filters ever. It's right. I'm still using the original. You know,
I haven't even cleaned them. I mean, it's still filtering really nice. You know, of course, I don't use that much. I drink mostly Coca-Cola.
Well, yeah. Your Coca-Cola would be gone.
Yeah,
you know?
That's right.
If jeez.
Boy, then there's going to be a
that's
problem.
When, that's yeah. When Bill declares war on the world.
Yeah. Then I get out the guns and the ammo.
But, you know, this is something that...
Break into Walmart.
Well, this is where I think, you know, getting the basic necessities down first are vital. And then any of the accessories that you think beyond that. And this next guy, he kind of goes into that. He talks about – the one point I want to make out is he talks about how – a little bit about the Carrington event that we just had. But then he goes into Texas and other southern states.
Yeah, that where, mess they had, yeah.
Yeah, it almost became a complete collapse of the electrical grid, and people were – little nervous. They were a little on the edge there because
they should have been. Yeah,
yeah. The electrical grid is a fragile
thing. They could even
thing.
Heat themselves. Even the propane or the natural gas system kind of froze up.
Yeah, that's crazy.
All those windmills and solar panels didn't really help a whole lot.
It showed us. Well, it's something that we talked about before. Even with the current wind and solar panels that they have in a grid setup. The major problem is supply side. They're not storing the electric that's produced from them in a storage device, and that's the major fault of solar and wind right now. That's the biggest failure, is there's no way of storing that. They're not using batteries because batteries can, you know, they fail at that scale. And
the batteries are a weak spot in everything,
yes.
Even EV cars
yes.
And all that.
Yes.
I mean, you're just not going to – you can't beat gasoline.
But you can't beat gasoline, and you also can't beat nuclear power. And this is where we have a problem with storing energy, and we can't do it. And so I think this is where being prepared for that in mind, this next guy talks about the six essential things that you should at least start out with. If you don't have these six things in line, then – I think this is one I've seen before.
That I always thought about the Amish because
right.
I hung out, not a lot, but I dealt with them quite a bit.
Right. They're good people.
And I'd ask questions. You know, you don't use no electricity. What the heck? You know, how do you manage? You know, they grew their own animals. They made their own clothes.
Right.
You know,
they nowadays go buy fabric from Walmart, but that's a whole different story there.
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, but I think they could do without Walmart.
Oh, sure.
If they had to, you know. They still go to McDonald's and
right.
They still go, you know.
Right.
You see them everywhere. But
Some of them are quite interesting people that they'll use some electricity now, but they're not – the ones around this area, there's different orders of – you know, that they follow. Some of them are conservative, no electricity. And then the younger generation gets older and they become the elders and they start approving things.
Yeah, they get their own generators.
Yeah.
Gasoline
powered, you know, DC powered gas engines. Some of them allow that, some don't. I've dealt with ones that don't allow anything. And then the next door neighbor, they're part of a church that does allow it. And so it's a weird mix. But yes, but going off of them, they have a lot of experience that
it was interesting to me and to, you know, see how they live. Now, not that I wanted to live that way,
no.
but
we take our modern conventions very easily, gently.
So I don't know. I'm old enough now where I don't have to really prepare for too much longer.
Right,
you know?
Right.
If I'm good for the next 20 years, I think I'll be fine.
Right.
You know, I've lived long enough. I just have to find some place to plant me. That's all.
Right.
So anyways, well, let's listen to this next guy. I heard a little bit of it. I didn't hear the whole thing. So.
Right.
So, you know, talking about Texas and what happened there, that was a close one.
Right. And the six essentials that probably people should have had.
Yeah, right. Hey, before we go any farther, what we're about to play was a video, and we just took the audio from it because the audio gave you all the details you really need to know. But they'll mention it's a video, so that's the reason.
The Texas interconnect power grid failure should be an eye-opener for many, even if you are far removed from Texas and don't expect any prolonged period of cold weather. There are many reasons why the power grid can and it will go down. The U.S. power grid is fragile and aging, and it will take several years of dedicated resources and work to bring it up to speed. In the meantime, you would be wise not to just brush off what happened in Texas. Texas's power grid was seconds and minutes away from a catastrophic failure that could have left Texans in the dark for months had they not immediately started implementing rolling blackouts to balance the demand and production. A few hours without power is an excellent opportunity for a barbecue. A few days without power and people have a little concern and maybe learn to prepare better. But a month or more without power and the region's social order and norms will cease to exist. Don't dismiss what happened in Texas wherever you live. It's a wake-up call to everyone. It should awaken you to the fact that your preps have to be able to sustain you through all sorts of disasters in far longer than just a few days. If you're new to prepping, you may be wondering where to even begin. If you've been prepping for a while, you may have found some of your preps didn't work as you planned or didn't address your real needs for long enough. I'll discuss the basics of what you need to survive an extended grid down period of at least 2 weeks. And I'll use examples from Texas to illustrate clearly what we need to prepare for and why. Six prepper essentials. I've categorized six essential things to get in order that will get you through the majority of disasters that may occur. There are other videos on this channel specific to everything from wildfires to earthquakes and even cold weather power outages. But these six essentials will provide you a basis from which you can grow. Remember that for each, you need to make sure that you have a minimum of 2 weeks' supply. I'll be covering a lot of supplies in this video that can make a major difference in an emergency situation, and I'll post links to each of them in the description section below if you want to check out any of them. So let's go ahead and get started. Water. The first essential is, without a doubt, water. I recommend storing at a minimum of 1 gallon per person per day. If you can store 3 gallons per person per day, that would be ideal if space is not a constraint. 5 gallon BPA-free plastic water storage containers can provide you with a stackable solution, but you'll need to stack several of these to accomplish your water storage goals, and many are not designed to be stacked beyond 2 or 3 at the maximum. Another solution is interlocking water bricks. The interlocking and stackability of these make it possible to line the closet's walls, the trunk of cars, or even space under your beds. Just remember that any water storage product that may freeze should only be filled to 3/4 capacity. This will allow for expansion without compromising the container's walls. Beyond storing water, you also need to have the means to heat, treat, or filter water. When municipal treatment and pumping systems fail, everything from bacteria to raw sewage could taint your water supply. With the intent to extend your stored water supplies, or if you need to obtain your water from the wild, or precipitation collection systems you may have made, you will need to render the water safe for drinking. Something as simple and inexpensive as a mini sawyer can mean the difference between life and death, especially if you can't boil your water. Germicidal water purification tablets are another lightweight, portable solution for you. Whatever you implement, don't just store water. Make sure you can treat and drink water from the wild as well. Food. Food is the second essential. Relying on your existing pantry with the hope that you can go to the grocery store just before an unforeseen disaster strikes, it's not going to cut it. Sadly, most Americans only have a few days worth of real meals. Unless you want to be creative and learn how to make ranch dressing, mustard, ketchup, maple syrup, and soy sauce soup to survive, you'll want to make sure at a minimum you have at least 2 weeks of food on hand that is calorically dense enough to sustain you. I'll post a link in the cards above to a video detailing how to build a 2 week food supply. You should take in a minimum of 1,200 calories, and you should make sure to get a good dietary blend of meats, vegetables, vitamins, minerals, sugars, and starches. Beans, rice, and pasta can form a base for you to build upon with further additions. Even pouring a can of soup over a cup of rice will sustain you and make you feel full. In addition to having your own food supply on hand, you may want to consider supplementing your supplies with freeze-dried food. The advantage of freeze-dried food is that you only have to boil water, add it to the Mylar bag that has the food in it, and you've got a solid meal in about 10 minutes. Also, a mild multivitamin and an electrolyte drinking powder will keep your metabolism steady during a disaster. Cooking. Cooking is one of the essentials to survive a minimum of 2 weeks after a grid down situation. I already mentioned eating from your supply, so I won't repeat it here. Think also of how you're going to cook. Having a small, relatively inexpensive cooking propane stove will allow you to boil water and cook food. Just make sure you have propane on hand. I'll post a link in the cards above if you want to see a video I did a few years back covering the basics of cooking after a disaster. If you're an apartment dweller without a balcony, your range of options is smaller. There are not many fires you can safely bring indoors because of deadly carbon monoxide. If you can't afford a propane camping stove, which can be safely operated indoors, you could survive by cooking over candles or cans of Sterno, if necessary. It's not an ideal situation, and it isn't the one I would recommend trying for the first time after disaster strikes, but a person can easily cook with this method. Be aware of smoke, smell, and light. After 2 weeks, people will be starving, and you don't want them around. Heating or warming food at lower temperatures will keep fragrances down. Finally, think of your cooking source as also your heating source. Many in Texas benefited from their camping stoves when the natural gas stopped flowing or when wood for fireplaces couldn't be easily obtained. Speaking of fire, several subscribers emailed saying that they were glad they had firewood prepared and stored in a wood rack. Also, be sure to have carbon monoxide detectors already in place if you don't use them now, preferably a battery-operated option. After major disaster, it's not uncommon to learn that people perish as a result of operating gas generators or operating cooking devices incorrectly indoors. Power. My other video on what you should know to survive the next prolonged grid down situation, it explores in more depth how to define your real power needs. Essentially, you have to assess how tied to electricity you are and then be able to minimally and occasionally meet those needs. If you're dependent upon a drug requiring low temperatures, you'll need a power supply for a small refrigerator of some kind. Most portable generators range from gas to propane to solar. Solar is great, so long as the sun is shining. Gas may not always be available. Propane gives you a little more portability and options. I'll post a link in the cards above if you want to watch the video where I discuss the pros and cons of gas versus solar generator options. I personally have a combination of gas generators, solar generators, and I recently just picked up a dual fuel generator yesterday to allow me to run off both gas and propane. Living in Southern California, we become accustomed to rolling blackouts and seasonal high winds causing the power to be turned off to prevent fires. I'm also in the process of adding 8 kilowatts of solar panels onto my roof next month, which I'll tie into a battery backup system that can charge directly from the panels and power certain circuits in my house if the power goes down, creating a true off-grid suburban power setup. And more to come about that shortly on the channel. And while we're on the subject of power, I might mention that you make sure you have several headlamps or flashlights available as well, preferably options which can be powered via USB if you have backup solar or a gas generator. Medicine. The second to last essential I will address here is medicine. When it comes to medicine and medical aid, you have three considerations: maintenance, first aid, and information on hand. Maintenance is any drugs or solutions that get you through your day-to-day. Is there a possibility you might need an EpiPen? Do you often suffer from allergies? Are you on any medicines that you have to take daily or you can tither off of? If so, these need to be part of your maintenance prepping plan. The next consideration is first aid. I always suggest you start with a basic first aid kit and build it out from there. Many first aid kits advertise hundreds of items in them, but having 200 band-aids of low quality and that don't stick together will be worthless if you genuinely need them. Add to your basic kit quality products and extras you may need, like a tourniquet, Israeli bandage, and gauze. In the event of a major emergency, 911 may not be able to make it to you at all, and getting to the hospital, it might be very difficult. When you think of your medicine needs, also think of having printed out material. Most don't consider that the internet may be down as we become so accustomed to having information on hand readily available on our phones and computers. Having at least one good book you have read, like the Survival Medical Handbook, could be the difference between life and death. You should have information that can be readily available if the internet is not available. Climate and shelter. Finally, you must be able to literally weather the climate you find yourself in during the disaster. Before winter comes, review your warm weather preps. As many learned in Texas or hopefully learned in the city prepping video, 4 critical rules to survive a winter power outage I released 2 months ago. There are many techniques to survive a winter power outage. It may seem odd to pitch a tent inside your house, but it creates a microclimate for you. Even throwing a tarp and blankets over a table and on the floor creates a temperature-stable environment for you. When it comes to keeping warm, make sure your emergency preparedness goes beyond a couple of emergency Mylar blankets. Do you have wool blankets, a hat, gloves, and a scarf? If the disaster is wet, do you have the means to get and stay dry? If it's a hot weather disaster, can you stay cool? Can you recognize the early signs of heat stroke and know what to do? Before each session, sit down and consider your preparedness for the weather. If you can't live in the weather occurring out of your window right now when the furnace goes out or the air conditioning stops, what do you need to do to survive the climate? Exposure to the elements without protection will kill a person faster than dehydration or starvation, so give this element top consideration as you prep. There's so much to consider when you start prepping for a power grid failure that could last days, weeks, or even months. When the power is down, the roads are closed, and the pipes are freezing, your options become extremely limited. Set a clear 2-week self-sufficiency target for yourself. Realize that the Texas grid failure happened twice before for the same exact reasons. It is likely to happen again. Even if you aren't swept up in that disaster, understand that the 3 power grids in America are fragile and precariously balanced. Set a 2-week target, build the 6 essentials I outline in this video, and you'll have a solid foundation from which to build. What do you think? What's your essential?
This is the Real BS Show, and let's end this day with an old Southern gentleman talking about his prepping, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. He kind of gets on the porch and just talks.
Yeah, he just shoots the breeze for a while. It's kind of relaxing. And
he has some good experiences,
very
too.
Very interesting to hear, yeah. He's just a good old boy. And I don't know, he's kind of out in the boundaries of towns and stuff. He's
right.
He's self-sufficient, I guess you could say.
Right.
Pretty much, except for the Walmart runs every 3 months. But that'd be a nice way to end this and just kind of pick up some pointers about prepping. And prepping is something you don't need to do. I mean, it may never happen, you know.
Right.
It may never happen, and most folks laugh at me because I've done it, and I'm already prepped, so I'm pretty much ready for it, but I live that way, so, I mean, that's just the way I have to be.
Right.
The only thing, I don't have enough food for the deer, but...
The deer know how to get their own food.
Yeah, the deer, instead of handouts, they'll have to go forage for themselves.
You know, there's some saying about the deer that it's quite interesting, is they're getting a lot of handouts and from farmers, you know, planting crops and stuff. And imagine if they weren't able to plant crops and stuff, the deer population would go down drastically and they would have to forage as they used to before any farmland was ever plowed, you know. And in some ways humanity would turn the same way. We'd have to resort to how we did things in the Iron Age, you
things
know.
Would get a lot different.
Yeah.
But they're fun to talk to, and they're my friends. So,
yeah,
so.
Yeah. And they also come up, and whenever I hear noise, and they think they're getting fed. And I've seen it. I witnessed it, and I was like, wow. They're like coming like a ringing a bell. You could ring a bell, and they're coming for dinner time.
Alarm clock. So, okay, well, let's listen to this. I forget the guy's name, but old Southern gentleman.
From Mississippi.
Mississippi, of all places. Okay. Let's do it.
We've been working, you know, over at Pecan Grove. We've got that, we're over there 12 to 16 hours every day. We got track hoes and dozers and everything clearing. And I have to be there constantly with these people because they, you know, to make sure they don't destroy this or that. But we're getting things done over there. I do have some things. I bought some extra grapevines this morning. We went early this morning. This is Sunday morning. Give you a date, it's the 12th. We went right after daylight, we went to Walmart to do the prepping run, or the replenishing run, should I say. And man, the prices of stuff, guys, was just, it was bad. I'm like, I don't know how people buy groceries at stores. We had to do it, and we got things like, you know, I mean, you'll see it, you've probably seen it in the video, the things that we bought. But, you know, hardly anything for eating. Mostly was just other objects. But, you know, around the homestead here, everything is greening up. It's starting to turn green. We were in the morning, which would be Monday morning, We're supposed to be down to freezing again. We'll probably have a hard frost because it says that the wind will be almost like 1 to 0 mile an hour to 1 mile an hour, which means we'll have a frost. So we really can't get out and do much gardening. Over at Pecan Grove, we did plant a few things over there. Our potatoes are up beautiful over there. They just look fantastic. Just trying to think, keep y'all up to date on some of the things that's going on. I mean, the weather's been so nasty till we just can't get out and do anything. I'm sitting here, guys, watching the birds within 10 feet of me. There's like 50 of them right here around me. And it just catches my attention. I'm sitting here watching them. The huckleberry trees are all bloomed out, and they're sitting on the limbs, and these birds are hopping all over the ground here around me. It's just nature at its finest. It's cold, and they're pecking in this little tiny rocks on the ground here looking for something. I guess where the acorns, where we've run over them and they've been crushed up with the ranger, they're eating the little pieces of them, looks like. Seen some squirrels here a while ago. All the wildlife is out this morning in full force. I just want to take time this morning, guys. I want to talk about grid down. When the grid goes down. And I don't spend a lot of time talking about this stuff. I have in the past, and I don't believe in beating dead horses, we've talked about it and talked about things that could happen, but if you remember, I told you you're going to start seeing things in the skies. You're going to start seeing things that you've never seen before, or not necessarily never seen before, but you don't hardly ever see, like, this balloon issue going on and how that they're taking them down, and there's this big scare now. We're going to be EMP'd, and there's the probability of that's pretty high because of the simple fact. I'm really more worried about a coronal mass ejection than I am an EMP. I'm just being honest. I believe that the coronal mass may get us before an EMP does. But, you stop and you think about an EMP if something like, or a coronal mass ejection happens. We just had what was the last thing I was told? We just had an X flare. Well, first of all, a piece of the sun came off and just blew out into space. And then we had a Class X flare just Saturday, I believe it was. Class X 1.1 or something like that. Guys, all it's going to take is for this to be Earth-facing at the right, just at the right position to do a kill shot on us. And if that happens and we have a grid-down situation, I have lots of subscribers that work at these big, giant power plants. And they send me information talking about how that if something like that happened, some of them said, some of our bigger transformers come from China. One of them sent me some stuff talking about some of them come from Germany, and there is a 2-year waiting period to get them here. And let's just be honest about this. If this happened, then China or Germany is not going to be manufacturing anything for us. Let's just be honest about it. They're going to be more interested in taking care of their own selves at the time. And what does it mean if the grid goes down? Have y'all read One Second After? Used to when I taught survival, this is one of the books that I would tell my people to read. That and a book called The Patriot. The Patriot actually updates itself. The One Second After, it's just a story. But The Patriot actually has new series is coming out, and it updates itself on a regular basis. Ooh, that sun's it feels good, but it's getting warm. But, I've been doing a good bit of thinking. Wanda have about this. If a grid goes down, I told her, I said, Wanda, you and me both. Wanda and I, we talk about these scenarios all the time, about who's going to pass away, who's going to live. First of all, if we have a grid down situation, especially an EMP or a coronal mass ejection, the planes and flying in the sky that's not hardwired for it, which most aren't, but the military predominantly mostly is now, but they're just going to fall out of the sky. And it doesn't matter how much prepping you do or what kind of facility you have. If your house just happens to be in the path of an airplane that just falls out of the sky, and then everybody else is going to die. I mean, so you got all those people that's going to die because there's going to be no way to control anything. It's just going to do a nosedive to the ground. And you stop and think, we have, what is it, over 200 planes every hour in the air over the United States. So you've got all those planes, if they're not hardwired, it's just going to hit the ground. And then wherever they hit is going to be massive fires. And not to mention, if they hit in an apartment complex, or if they hit in a subdivision, if they hit people's house or big department stores in cities, you know, wherever, you know, and then you got all those people that's going to be killed. And then you got to think about the fact that people that's on life support, you know, they'll pass away. People that are dependent upon some sort of electrical device to keep them alive. People have to have oxygen. People have to have dialysis, all this kind of stuff. You know, I mean, I'm just being realistic today, guys, because we're there now. It's not talking about what might happen in the future and what we will do. We're there. I mean, it's time to start talking about the real things now. You know, the people in dialysis are not going to make it. I mean, you got people that, I'm trying to think of some of the things we talked about in some of our classes. People who take insulin, they have no way to keep it cool because the refrigeration's gone down. And, you know, not every one of them will pass away, but a lot of them will. And people who are dependent upon specific medications, they'll pass away. People that are on anti-anxiety medication and they can't get it. This is where the term zombie's going to play into fact, that people are going to go wild and mad and because they can't get their medication. And the United States is really a soft country. We're a soft country because we've lived in luxury for years. I mean, since the World Wars, we've all lived in luxury. And even before then, in the Roaring Twenties, we were living in luxuries. And you got to stop and think. We know nothing about the kind of life that people in other countries live, where they face, like Ukraine right now. You know what I mean? Those people, the cities are being bombed. I mean, you take your own life in your hands if you just leave the house, and then there's no guarantee that some group of soldiers is not going to just come through your place and just wipe it off the map just because they can. You know, that happened in the World Wars with Germany. Germany, under Hitler, walked through places, and I know one lady was telling me a story about her grandfather or great-grandfather was out in the field with his two cows, and he wasn't harming anybody. He was just raising some crops, and they drove by, and just for fun, they just shot him. You know, shot him in the legs first, and then as he fell down, and they just finished shooting him up. I mean, just for the fun of it. He wasn't hurting anybody. He was just out in a field plowing with two cows or steers. And I mean, these are the kind of things that happens in war. And there's no guarantees as to who will pass away and who will live. God always leaves a remnant, or allows a remnant to be left. And you know, it's where the term "only the strong survive." I mean, this is where this comes in at. And you know, I don't care how much prepping you've done. I've told you guys before, literally, it's not about how much you've prepped. It's about prepping for your life eternally, where you're going to end up at if something happens to you, because the probabilities will be pretty high. We're told in the book of Revelation that 2/3 of the earth's population is going to pass away before anything massive even happens here. So we've got that to contend with. And will we be part of that 2/3? We don't know. And I keep telling y'all, build your faith. Build your faith. Remember I told you, you're going to see things in the skies, in the heavens, things that you're going to question. Then we talked about there's going to be all these distractions. And guys, while we're off chasing balloons with Raptor 22s, using $100,000 missiles to shoot down a balloon that cost a fraction of that. You know, I mean, where's the wisdom in any of this? You know, I mean, we're making some very poor decisions in this country. And it's it's the earthquake that happened over in Turkey and Syria. Guys, this wasn't a normal earthquake. This earthquake worked off of frequencies. Normally, you have the whole earth just trembling and everything just falls crazy and, you know, sloshing back and forth and all this kind of stuff. This was a different type of earthquake that happened over there. This one worked on a total different frequency than other earthquakes worked on. If you notice, the buildings, when they fell like they had been imploded from the inside out. They literally fell straight down on top of one another. They didn't rock and back and forth like this. They just literally just collapsed and fell because of the vibration of the earth. I think this thing, it done a fracture like 190 miles long, or it was 90 or 190, something like that. I've got so much information in my head here lately. Things are happening so fast, it's hard to keep up with everything if I don't actually have a paper in front of me where I've jotted this stuff down. I mean, guys, we're experiencing things, and we've got another massive time frame coming up. February the, what is it, the 18th through about the 21st or 22nd, they're expecting another massive event to take place. Don't know where it's at in the world, just know it's going to happen. Something's going to happen because of what's going on in the solar system out there. And there is no safe, because of these types of earthquakes, there is no safe structures. That's the thing that's being said. Everybody goes, well, my place is, I live in a wood-framed house, and, you know, according to what I'm able to find out, there is no safe structure for the kind of stuff we're going to start experiencing. And then we've got the simple fact, when you have a coronal mass ejection or the new EMPs, you know, most homes are going to burn because the wiring in the house can't handle the heat, and it'll just set itself on fire. Now, power lines are not coated with plastics and stuff like that. They're just bare wires. It'll run them and heat them up. You know, transformers will blow, but the houses is all encased in plastic wiring, NMB, you know, type 12-2 with ground. NMB, most of them are done with that. And 10-2s and 10-3s and stuff like that for, you know, your 220s and stuff. And then you have your number 4s and your 6s and stuff like that. All of them's coated in plastic. And when that plastic heats up, it's just going to catch on fire and burn. And most people don't realize that's one of the reasons why everything we have is protected by our EMP shield. And if you're interested in those, we have a link down below. And I'm not trying to sell them here. You get a discount if you use our code. But I'm just telling you that there's a lot of issues going on in the solar system right now. And if we don't make some sort of preparation, people go, well, what good is it going? What difference does it make if we get EMP'd or we have a coronal mass ejection? There's going to be no power afterwards. So what difference? Why would you want a protector for your home? Well, there's a couple of reasons why. First, you don't want your house to burn. Secondly, if they get the power back up and running, and most of your stuff didn't burn in the house and fry, you still got stuff that works. Your washing machines, your refrigerators, all this kind of stuff that was hooked up to the power system, your computers, all this kind of stuff, it still works. And it's not going to be like you can go and you can go get another one at that time, because nothing will be up and running. Yeah, it'll be a skeleton thing sitting here working. And if you're one of the lucky ones to have a little power, then you might work. I mean, there are some issues, that some technologies that we have out there. Some of our cities have some very sensitive material in them. I'm going to use the word sensitive material. And they have a magnetic field underneath some of those cities. Most people are not even aware of it that live in these cities, that produces a dome over that city that prevents radiation or coronal mass ejection, anything like that, from penetrating and destroying the technologies within those cities. This type of stuff is out there, and most people don't even have a clue that it's even there where they live at. They can put domes over things and protect them now. So not everything will go down. That's the reason why you don't want everything you have getting fried. Everybody goes, why you got them on your Rangers? Why you got them on your tractors? Why you got them on your cars and your trucks? You're not going to be able to get out and drive. People will just take you down if you did. It's not about that. It's about if you're out on the road and something happens. Now, where we live at is so rural. When we go to town and back, we might pass 3 vehicles. 4 sometimes, maybe. It's not like our roads are going to be congested. You know, I mean, if something happens and we're in town and something happens and we're able to still drive home while all the other vehicles are shut down, I'm coming home and I'll switch the vehicle off. It ain't going to be cranked back up until some semblance of structure gets back in place. I don't want to have to be my tractor. I want my tractor to still work. Even if that happens and I've got the diesel to run my tractor, I can run out and I can plow a place right quick and we can get some food in the ground and I don't have to crank it back up again. I can work it by hand after that. But it gives me the opportunity, my Ranger, if a storm comes through and trees fall down across everything, I've still got a Ranger that'll work as long as I have fuel in it and I don't be foolish with it. I can take my tractor and move stuff around as long as I'm not foolish with it. And yes, I know when people hear it running, they'll want to know why. And that'll be a protection issue. That'll be one of them kind of things you'll have to make a decision. What are my limitations? You know, what am I willing to do to protect what I have? These are things that we're just going to face. And people don't want to hear it, and I don't want to hear it. I don't even want to talk about it. But the simple fact is, our nation is soft. And if we have a grid down situation, I'm going to tell you what. I told a man this here a while back. All you've got to do, you don't have to hit the power system. All you got to do is take out the cell phone towers. You take out the cell phone towers today, people will kill each other. Because people are glued to a stupid phone. I don't even own one. I mean, people are glued to a cell phone. Well, I got to know where somebody's at, or I might get a text. Guys, I haven't had a phone in a year, probably longer than that. And now Wanda has one that she uses and does our YouTube stuff with, films with, and stuff like that. I don't even own one. I don't want one. And you take the phones out, I'm willing to say 90% of the population will just go nuts. They can't function without it. I told Wanda, I said, I used to travel all over this country. I didn't have a phone with me when I traveled. I just had an Atlas map. I looked at the Atlas map and I figured my way around everywhere. I didn't have a GPS and it wasn't until later probably the mid-90s, I was introduced to a GPS system because of the hunting that I was involved in, where I could sit in the living room of my house on a particular piece of equipment. I'm going to just use that phrase. The particular piece of equipment I had, I was given this software. I could look at anything on the face of in the United States, and I could go right to your yard. I could walk with you through your fields with it. I could, you know, when I was like hunting up in Connecticut or Massachusetts or New York or places up in there where I was hunting, I could call the people and we could walk through their property about where my boundaries were and all that kind of stuff, and I automatically knew before I ever left to go up there to hunt where my limitations was and whose property I was on. And I knew that because I could walk through it with the software with them. And that was back in the mid-90s. You can only imagine what it is now. So, guys, we've advanced way beyond a lot of things that we even think we have. But the main thing I want us to understand is, if the grid goes down, are we really prepared? If this balloon that the other day had happened and an EMP had been on it and it had happened, where would you be today? Would you be surviving? Would you be groveling? Would you be passed away? I mean, stop and think about it. Where would you be if that balloon had EMP'd us? And how would your storage be? How would your prepping system be? How would you be prepared? Are you prepared to meet the Maker? I mean, ask yourself those questions. Where am I at in the scheme of things? And then make a wise decision.